I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central Show. The show is brought to you by MTN Business. Learn more about their products and services at mtnbusiness.co.za. And we thank them for partnering with the Tech Central Show to bring you these great interviews. Now, Hilton Colner is my guest today. He is Chief Executive of Discovery Bank, the digital-first bank launched about 4 years ago now by the JSE-listed Discovery Group. Hilton has been with Discovery basically since its founding. He served as Chief Marketing Officer for 9 years before being appointed as CEO of Discovery Life and later CEO of Discovery South Africa. In 2021, he was appointed to lead Discovery Bank as CEO, a position he's now held for the past 4 years. An actuary, he has a Bachelor of Economic Science in Actuarial Science and Econometrics. He's a Fellow of the Faculty of Actuaries and a Fellow of the Actuarial Society of South Africa. He's my guest on the Tech Central Show today, and he joins me in the studio now. Hilton, it's great to see you. Thanks for making the time.
It's great to be here, Duncan.
It's been 4 years now since you launched Discovery Bank. I've been seeing some very positive headlines in the last couple of months, most specifically around your latest set of interim results. It sounds like the business is going well.
Yeah, I think the business is going extremely well, and I think ahead of plan in virtually every metric. So for a startup, that's a great place to be. And for a bank, it's important, you know, in the sense that it is kind of gaining traction and really growing on the strength of quality and the product that we're offering.
You were telling me that you recently surpassed the 1 million customer mark. What do you attribute this strong growth to? Why is Discovery Bank doing so well?
So I think, at the core, I think all of the Discovery businesses are built on a simple premise of shared value, mm-hmm. and kind of a model that incentivizes the right behaviors within our clients and monetizes those better behaviors for the benefit of the client. It ultimately is good for the client. It's good for us as an organization. And the bank is built on a very, very similar model. So I think as all of our businesses across the Discovery Group have been, we product-led. Mm-hmm. We kind of are built on the philosophy that our products must be better for our clients. And the shared value model gives us the basis on which to deliver something which we think is just great for our clients and good for us in the long term.
Everyone, of course, knows about the Vitality product that you offer. Was that kind of at the core of building Discovery Bank? Did you take the learnings from Vitality in the health business and translate those into financial services?
We've taken a lot of the learnings. I think that and the bank really is built on a few different hypotheses. You know, it's a combination of a technology play where we saw that you know, you could build a bank on a digital platform that could really scale efficiently for customers. And as we've seen the environment in the industry move from physical bricks and mortar, where banks were branches, and then ATMs, and then evolving more and more into smartphones and being, you know, I guess sort of a branch in every client's hands. The kind of the ability to scale a digital bank, but a different kind of digital bank, not a thin bank, not a neo bank, a full service offering for our clients that could really be their primary bank. And then a bank that was built on our shared value model and the insights that we built up over time through our previous Discovery Card venture with the FirstRand Group. And we gained a lot of insight through that process, understanding the kind of the linkages between credit defaults, mm-hmm. and individual client behaviors. And through that kind of process, we gained a lot of confidence that we could build a bank on a kind of a blank sheet of paper with really kind of cutting edge technology, our Discovery full service philosophy, and a shared value model that effectively brings down defaults, makes clients more financially healthy in the process, and through that process enables us to offer them brilliant value, mm-hmm. and rewards and monetize that kind of lower default risk for the client themselves. And it's all come together in what is, we think, a kind of a very simple user interface, mm-hmm. in the Discovery Bank app, and through some really, really great journeys that we offer our clients in our ecosystems. And that's really what's driven it.
Mm-hmm. Now, you obviously listed through the Discovery Group. Maybe just give us some insight into Discovery Bank's finances. What are you looking at in terms of profitability at this stage, and what are your targets?
So I think the bank has now been through almost an investment phase. Mm-hmm. In our interim results, we announced that the bank itself is fully profitable. and it was reached a run rate of monthly profitability. And so now it kind of is every client is additive and incremental in terms of the kind of the value that it starts to generate for the bank. And that's I suppose the kind of scalability of the platform that has been built. So from a financial perspective, we're ahead of plan. We envisage, you know, building a bank is an investment. It's an investment, I guess, sort of at a corporate level, but it also is an investment in the country in a sense, because when you build a bank is forever. And it is a significant investment. So you know, I think the bank itself represents, I think, our optimism in South Africa, our belief in our model, and it's played out, I think, ahead of plan. And so achieving profitability is a significant milestone. Mm-hmm. It means that the bank is effectively now self-sustaining as we move forward. And you know, I think we set a long-term goal now of 2 million clients and 3 billion rand of profit by 2029. So we kind of keep on setting what we think are ambitious goals, but reflecting the kind of the inherent opportunity and potential of the bank.
Tell me about who your customers are in the bank. Is it mainly Discovery Health clients who've moved across to the bank or signed up with the bank because they're already Discovery customers, or are they mostly new?
Not at all. It's been a fascinating journey. So you know, I think initially we saw the bank as really building on our Discovery ecosystem for our clients. And that it certainly does do that. So if you've got rewards in Vitality Health, as an example, where you get discounted flights or healthy food based on how you're managing your health, the bank is additive. So as a bank client, you get greater travel rewards, bigger discounts on your flights, bigger discounts on your healthy food. And so it's natural for clients that are already in the Discovery group and are experiencing those products to also then join the bank. And it's I think that's played out very well, and it's served those clients exceptionally well. But what we've seen over the last couple of years is that the bank has much broader applicability and resonates way beyond the Discovery traditional client base. So about two-thirds of our clients today that are joining the bank, and we're growing at a rate of about 1,300 new clients per day. Yeah. So about two-thirds of those, 800 to 1,000, are completely new to the Discovery group. So the bank is attracting an entirely new client base.
Where are they coming
to
from?
Discovery? They're coming from a broad cross-section of South Africans. Typically what we would define as a mass affluent to kind of high net worth individual. And the bank tends to attract clients from across the spectrum. So we've got products that really fit almost every segment, from a really low cost digital banking product, a pay as you transact gold account, which is really, really cost efficient. And clients can kind of onboard and then start to experience the bank through that entry level product. But then all the way through to our Purple Banking Suite, which is our private banking division, where clients will have relationship bankers, access to really sophisticated service, and a very, very comprehensive offering. So what we've seen is that we've attracted clients from across the entire kind of socioeconomic spectrum.
And what's interesting, is that your goal?
And that's been, I think we're seeing that the product has real relevance. And so what's been interesting is that, you know, the insight is that clients benefit from digital banks in different ways. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you think about it, digital banks are completely unconstrained by business hours. And so we find that clients are joining the bank at all kinds of hours of the day and night. But what's also interesting is that they don't have to travel. So there's, you know, our KYC is fully digital. You can join from anywhere where you are, as long as you've got effectively a cell phone signal. Our app is zero rated. So for somebody who traditionally would have had to travel long distances to go into a bank branch to KYC or FICA with their documents, none of that is necessary in terms of joining the bank. So we tend to attract clients from urban areas, rural areas, and across the socioeconomic spectrum. We tend to over-index amongst kind of young adults, graduates, young professionals.
Why is that?
As you would expect, I suppose, more digitally savvy, and really kind of engaged in many of the ecosystems like travel, which is really aspirational, and you know, I suppose they are digital natives. And then we also tend to over-index in the private banking space, where the bank itself was rated as offering the best private banking service in the country, which is an amazing accolade to the private banking team, mm-hmm. Kind of 4 years out of the blocks. Mm-hmm. And so those are the two areas that we see the bank really over-indexing, but our clients are joining us from across the spectrum in terms of age, geography, and income, which is really, really, really exciting.
I know the banks for decades have targeted younger consumers, teenagers and stuff, to get an initial bank account because that locks them in theory, for life. Are you seeing a lot of kids, youngsters opening Discovery Bank accounts and this being their first bank account?
So I think we're seeing a lot of parents utilize the bank account as almost a family account, where they give their kids a virtual card. You can add it in seconds and then load it on your child's phone if they've got a device, or add a card, a physical card, which your child then has. And you can you've got amazing control of and account management capabilities in our bank. So you can pause the account if you need to. You can transfer funds in real time. You can monitor all the transactions. So it allows parents to really kind of control and manage their kids' accounts, but from a distance, so that they have a degree of independence as well. So we see a lot of that utilization, and I think hopefully those kids will be with us for the long term. Mm-hmm. But I think the bank itself we see as applying in the same way that our health products do to the entire family unit, and it does lend itself to that.
I'm sure you do a lot of market research. What is that telling you about the reasons that customers are giving for switching from their existing bank to Discovery Bank?
So it's interesting because a lot of the kind of the features of our product appeal to different people. So we have a number of ecosystems in the bank. For example, you can see your entire Discovery portfolio on the face of the bank mobile, and you can manage it, and it really. Is easy for clients of the Discovery Group. So that's been really, really appealing. Our miles currency as a rewards currency, which manifests in all of our vitality programs, whether you're managing your health or how you're driving or your money, that they are additive and they aggregate, and so it becomes a really valuable reward. So for clients that are focused on kind of the monetizing of better behaviors and the rewards component, the miles are a real, real attraction. Our travel ecosystem has been one of the really, really appealing aspects of the product. And there what we did in COVID was we kind of took a view that travel would be one of the industries that would make a significant comeback. Mm-hmm. Post-COVID, it was, I suppose, kind of a belief in a life after COVID, in a sense, and we went about building our travel ecosystems, which involves in the bank being able to book any flight and then see your discounts, your rewards discounts in real time, mm-hmm. dynamically on the face of the mobile, and to then pay for the flight or the balance of the flight with your miles or from any of your accounts seamlessly. And you get up to 75% off flights, domestic and international, with our partners. That's been really, really attractive to our clients. When you get to the airport, you can go through the fast track security.
I've noticed that, yes.
Yeah, if you, depending on your card color, for our black and purple card holders, you get to skip the security queues, and then a wide range of our clients, from our platinum cards up, can experience our lounges across all of the South African airports. Mm-hmm. And then we've also got discounts on accommodation and car hire as well. So it's a full end-to-end ecosystem, also supported by payments. So, for example, if you want to open a Forex account, if you're traveling overseas, you can open a virtual Forex account in dollars, euros, pounds, instantaneously, in real time, create a virtual card, transfer money from your Zara account into a dollar
That's
account in real time, literally, and then spend on it as you would if you were using dollars, if you were in the US as an example. So it really, it kind of creates this travel ecosystem that addresses every aspect of it. So for somebody that is an aspiring traveler or a business traveler, or just traveling with their family, the product itself, it makes it more affordable and it makes it easier. So we've really invested in building out these entire ecosystems, digital ecosystems and physical ecosystems for our clients, and that's resonated.
Yes, yes. There's clearly a big fight going on between the banks and retailers at the moment about these sort of partnerships. You've recently partnered with Checkers and Checkers 6060, I think, as well. Yeah. And we've seen Pick and Pay signing with FNB eBucks. Just talk us through those partnerships and how crucial they are in both retail and banking, and what you're seeing out of them.
So, I mean, if you take a step back, we've had partnerships with retailers for several years. Firstly, from a health perspective. Mm-hmm. So we introduced our healthy food benefit nearly 20 years ago.
Wow.
And it was based on the insight, you know, that eating healthily is critically important to our clients, but it's actually more expensive. Mm. And so the ability to make healthy food cheaper was a real breakthrough. And we went through a process whereby we rated every single item in the supermarket through a clinical filter, and then on the shelf label went and actually identified them as Vitality Healthy Foods, where our clients could get 25% off on those items. Fully integrated with the POS point of sale devices in the supermarkets, and so it really created this amazing benefit. Fast forward a few years, and the bank really enhances that. The bank takes the rewards that you can get from 25% back on healthy food up to 75% back. Mm. And as you said, we've just recently introduced Checkers as a partner. We've had Woolworths for several years in the healthy food benefit. And so when you go into a Woolworths or when you go into a Checkers or order online through either of them, the benefits that you get as a client are up to 75% off on this massive range and catalog of healthy food. So you know, it's a tangible benefit for our clients, but it also talks to what we're trying to do, which is make them healthier. Mm. We offer a similar benefit with Clicks and Dis-Chem on the healthy care side, where there's a massive range of products in those stores that you get similar benefits on. And the natural result is that when our clients do go into those stores, they benefit significantly. And the retail partner mm-hmm. benefits from the channeling of our clients as well.
There must be some really interesting conversations that go on behind the scenes before these deals are signed.
So the economics in our case are so powerful because we're monetizing better behaviors. Mm. And that's what enables us to give rewards, which sometimes feel kind of gravity defying or just too good to be true. But it's because, you know, they're not a kind of an arm wrestle mm. between us and the retailer. Can you give us an extra 1% or 2%? It's based on a kind of a much more holistic economic model of how do we monetize better behaviors and reduce the risk and then channel that back in these really valuable rewards to our clients.
Last question on the on your customers. I imagine, obviously not every customer is the same, and I guess not every customer is going to be profitable for you. I imagine there are individuals for whom the bank's behavioral models don't stack up. How do you deal with instances like that?
So I think from an actuarial perspective, we're quite comfortable working on kind of the long-term value and probabilities mm-hmm. that clients represent us.
So you'd rather have them as a client even if they're not profitable.
And we know that I think the risk factors that we see over time from clients that maybe are significant rewards beneficiaries will manifest in lower risk costs mm-hmm. in the long term. So, for example, you know, our Diamond Vitality Bank clients get incredible rewards in terms of higher interest rates on their savings, low interest rates on their borrowings, plus all of the flight benefits and healthy food and the other rewards. But they are AAA rated. You know, they have virtually zero credit risk. Mm-hmm. So you know, the kind of the long-term value of that to us in that case is significant.
Yeah, those are the clients you really want to look after.
Those really are the clients. So there's kind of a present value mm-hmm. that we target and that's acceptable and sustainable, and will typically be fairly stable across all client groups. So clients that get massive value from us are typically much lower risk in the long term. Clients that derive less value in the short term will typically be kind of matched with a high risk profile in the long term as well.
Okay. Now, it's interesting. You've come in as a neobank or a digital bank, and there have been a whole lot of those being launched just in the last while. We've got Time Bank, Bank Zero. There are others I'm not mentioning. Many of those decided to go at come in at the bottom end of the market and attack the lower LSMs. You guys came in, I think, more from a higher LSM, I'm guessing because of your existing customer base on the Discovery Health side of things. Did you consider attacking coming in from the low end at all, or did that not make sense?
I think for us, the kind of the model of being a full service bank was important. Mm-hmm. That we never really saw the appeal in being a secondary or kind of even just a backup bank for our clients. And in order to deliver that level of service, you've got to be able to charge fees and to deliver value. Mm. And that's the proposition I think that we've really tried to present to clients, and it's resonated. So for example, you know, clients are depositing their salaries with us. We're a primary bank. We have high activity levels. We have over 20 billion in deposits that have grown rapidly amongst our clients. So we're seeing really high levels of engagement amongst the Discovery Bank clients, and it's because I think the proposition is much more holistic. Mm-hmm. It's a, you know, full service. If you need to get hold of us 24/7, we have qualified bankers available to every single client in the bank that you can call, and they are available to assist you. And what we've really tried to do is to create and to use technology in unique ways that you can deliver service to people from a distance. Mm-hmm. And our clients benefit from that. So far from being kind of lighter on service because we're a digital bank, we've in fact gone the opposite way. And we offer what we think is the most comprehensive service in the banking industry in South Africa. It's rated as such. The Ask Africa Orange Index rated our clients and South Africans rated Discovery Bank service as number one in the industry, which is quite an accolade and something I think we're really proud of in the bank, given that we're, you know, a digital bank.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a bit about what it took to actually build this bank. You've obviously launching in the last 5 years. You've had the advantage of being able to deploy on the latest technology. Many of the legacy banks, if I'm calling them that, in South Africa, still run on very old COBOL code and mainframes and all that sort of thing, which I'm guessing you guys haven't touched. How much of an advantage is that for Discovery Bank?
It's a significant advantage. You know, I think banking is complex. Mm. It's complicated. You are integrating with multiple systems, payment systems. There's systemic risk, so you've got to be kind of watertight, mm-hmm, and really resilient. The technology we've deployed allows us to have significant uptime for our clients. You know, I think as a new entrant, you don't have the latitude that traditional players have of, yep, being down for a day or 2 days or 3 days at a time. Mm-hmm. And clients will, you know, might tolerate it. In the case of a newer player, you know, our reputation is everything. So we aspire to be up 100% of the time. Our technology allows that, also allows us to be agile.
Have you had any downtime?
So I think we're not immune. Mm-hmm. And technology is unpredictable. But our uptime runs at kind of almost perfection, mm-hmm, and pretty close to 100%. So you know, I think we hold ourselves to the highest standards, and we've got a really, really strong kind of customer focus that demands that we have to be up, and that's what we aspire to.
Tell me a bit about your tech stack and what it looks like. Is it all cloud based? Do you run your own servers?
We've got a combination. And you know, we're not kind of religious, mm-hmm, about, you know, 100% cloud or 100% on-prem. But what we have done is we've tried to take almost sort of the best of both. As AI, you know, evolves and becomes more central to what we deliver, you know, I think we're seeing more and more in the cloud, mm-hmm, and the kind of the ability to scale the servers that we require becomes more important, but you know, I think we've really looked for a combination of on-premise tech and then cloud where it makes sense for specific uses, and you know, I think that what we've also done is utilize third-party suppliers where, mm-hmm, where it's made sense, but we've built the majority of what the client sees In the bank.
In-house.
Yeah. And
quite a big IT team then, do you?
We've got about half of the bank staff are in IT.
Wow.
Which is you know, I suppose what you'd expect in a digital bank.
Mm.
What's interesting now is that, and it reinforces the point around the scalability of technology. Today we have less than one employee per 1,000 clients. It's kind of running at around about 0.7 full-time employees or FTEs per 1,000 clients, which is less at just over a million clients. We're more efficient than all of the large banks in the country that have been around for decades and have obviously a lot more clients.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of shows the scalability of a really good tech platform.
I know when I was writing about banking and IT and banking more specifically years ago, the metric that the banks would always look at was the cost to income ratio.
Yeah, sure.
Is that still an important ratio in banking?
Yeah, so it's a critical ratio. Mm-hmm. You know, for us, we kind of are, as we've scaled to profitability, we've kind of just dropped below 100%.
Mm-hmm.
But we're dropping by about 15 to 20 percentage points per annum in terms of our cost-to-income ratio.
So what are you targeting eventually?
So, it's a great question. I don't think we've got kind of a clear long-term target.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, if you kind of extrapolate out the trend, you get to significantly less than 50%, which for us is materially below where you'd see the rest of the market. So I think it relies on us continuing to execute exceptionally well, but the opportunity is there to have a really, really efficient model.
A lot of the app work and development work has taken place in-house, but I presume you've deployed some sort of core banking system to underpin all of this. What is that core banking system?
Yeah, so our core system is an SAP system.
SAP,
yeah.
Okay.
It's a, you know, I think the it's been really robust.
Standard Bank moved to SAP many years ago and had a terrible time of it. Has your experience been a bit better?
Our experience has been excellent.
Okay.
You know, I think the it's provided us with a really robust solution, well tested. And able to operate at real scale. So, you know, we are processing hundreds of thousands of transactions per day, and it has really been resilient and scalable. So you know, I think it operates as our core, but then we've built all of the front end systems, the app and the kind of the systems and the interfaces that our clients see. Are all built internally by our team, and they kind of are specific to our model and our benefits and rewards.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk a little bit about what's coming down the line. We haven't spoken about business banking today at all. What, to use an American term, what's coming down the pike?
So we've got I think we operate on a launch cycle in Discovery across pretty much all of our businesses. Some of it's calendar based, like the medical scheme will typically have a September, October product launch in anticipation of new benefits for January. The bank has a launch coming up in the next couple of weeks. Hopefully I'll have the opportunity to speak to you about that. But we really kind of are focused on leveraging AI for the benefit of our clients and how we provide them with better service. And real insights and analytics at an individual client level
through chatbots.
I think that the kind of the potential with a generative AI model is much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's how we can effectively democratize private banking. You know, it's giving clients access to capabilities and analytics in their banking and advice that simply wasn't possible before. So far more than kind of being able to answer frequently asked questions.
Mm-hmm.
What we'd envisage is a world where every single client has the most sophisticated actuary stroke private banker all in one, and access to that in real time. And you know, I think you can only do that if your data is brilliantly engineered.
Mm.
If you've got, I think, you know, systems that are built on a really modern architecture, and then the ability to actually process using generative AI models in real time for your clients. So something that we've been working really hard on. We have been running a co-pilot, which we developed in-house for our call center bankers. And effectively, they've run hundreds of thousands of queries on the co-pilot, where every client, as they call in, our bankers would use the co-pilot effectively as almost first-line responses, generating answers in real time with full scripting in production for them to effectively give back to the clients. And through that, we've been able to really test the potential. So we're getting to a level of confidence now where we believe we can expose that to clients at the front end. That will certainly be, you know, we think a significant step forward, mm-hmm. And probably the first, certainly in South Africa, but you know, we think globally in terms of what's being delivered. And then I think the kind of almost the counterfactual of making things really convenient and easy and accessible for clients is that digital security becomes more and more important. Mm-hmm. So we've also kind of thought about how you make it more secure, safer for clients, and you know, I think that's a key area to give clients comfort in their digital bank, and walking around effectively with their bank branch in their pocket. Mm-hmm. So that's really where we've spent a lot of time, and that's where we think the next frontier will come.
Interesting. It sounds like you're going to be making some announcements in that regard soon, so I'm not going to push you on it too much. But generative AI is known for hallucinating as well, for making up things. Yeah. Is that a problem in your testing?
You know, I think that the team has been very careful in terms of how we think about the right guardrails, mm-hmm. And ensuring that you know there aren't hallucinations, and if there are, the ability to have the systems self-check and self-correct and step up to a human whenever it's needed. And that's really the artistry here, is kind of getting the balance right between flexibility and convenience for the client, but then at the same time having the right kinds of checks and balances in place. I think with the AI models becoming more and more developed, the hallucination risk mm-hmm. is also reducing at the same time. And I think we see that in general in AI. And I think it's going to improve rapidly from mm-hmm. here.
I wanted to just come back to the point you made about security, cybersecurity. We had the CIO of Standard Bank Group in here a few months ago, and he said the bank is spending 2 billion rand a year, 2 billion a year on cybersecurity. Yeah. How much of a problem is hacking, cybersecurity, and how have you approached it? I mean, obviously you've had the benefit of building a digital stack from scratch, so I presume that security was part of the foundation of what you built. But maybe just talk us through how much of a problem hacking is to the banking industry.
So I think globally, this is kind of one of the key issues that any financial services company and virtually any company, an organization would face. And a bank is obviously is right at the top of that list. So you know, I think from a group perspective, Discovery invests significantly in cybersecurity, and that's kind of almost the starting point for the bank as well. I think the issues that we see and the risks that we see that are unique to banking today is the kind of the human risk, the phishing risk, the vishing risk, mm-hmm. the smishing risk, where you know, through social engineering, clients are convinced to make payments, to add beneficiaries. And through that process, they are defrauded of significant sums. So you know, I think there's certainly you know, the cybersecurity risk is ever present, and you cannot, you know, as a bank and a financial services organization, it is number one mm-hmm. on every single risk register and the way that we think about the entire business. I mean, in terms of the design of the Discovery Bank app. You know, the thinking that was applied up front was that, you know, there's a single client where we have every single client is biometrically onboarded. So there's a facial recognition that's then matched to a specific device, to a specific account. And so it's kind of a one-to-one relationship, which makes it, you know, quite secure from that perspective in terms of having third-party access to your account, but the risk of that we see around syndicates and social engineering is something that you know, every single client needs to be alive to.
How deeply involved are the regulators, like the Reserve Bank, in cybersecurity in the banking industry? Do they pay very keen attention to it?
I think that, you know, the governance is incredibly robust, mm-hmm. and you know, the Reserve Bank and the Prudential Authority in particular in South Africa is rated as one of the best regulators in the world, mm-hmm. And I think as South Africans, we're beneficiaries of that. You know, if you go through, you look back at virtually every single financial crisis, the South African banking industry has been incredibly resilient. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of an accolade to our regulator and the Prudential Authority. And you know they are very much alive to the kind of the risks, whether they be cyber or economic, and the need for banks to have the right governance in place. So I think they hold us to the highest standard. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think that you see the benefit of that across the entire system.
Lastly, Hilton, I understand from your PR team that you're a prolific reader. And that you regularly post book reviews on LinkedIn. So I do have to ask you these two final questions. What's the best book you've read in the last year and why? And what is the best book you've ever read and why?
Sure. That's a really tough question. You know, I think that the reality is I tend to read during the holidays.
Okay.
That's my time for reading, and that's when I try to actually put out the list. It goes back in time actually to my gifting kind of policy, where I actually gift books to all of my colleagues at year end. So you know, some people, as a health organization, you know, wine, alcohol probably wasn't appropriate. Mm-hmm. So, and as an actuary, a book felt probably more in line. So that's kind of where it dates back to. And, you know, I think the book that I've been reading most recently is a book by a kind of a guy called Sahil Bloom. Mm-hmm. And you know, his entire kind of approach is behavioral, and how behaviors drive our mindset around finance, health, everything that we kind of are focused on at Discovery. And the fact that there's different aspects to your life. So I tend not to read fiction, and
life's too short.
I'm a non-fiction person. So what you'll find is that all of my favorites, mm-hmm, tend to sit in that space. I'm a big fan of Yuval Noah Harari.
Oh yes, I've read one of his books actually. Yeah, yeah, very good.
So you know, I tend to focus on a lot of behavioral economics, mm-hmm, and a lot of nonfiction.
Excellent. Hilton Kolner is CEO of Discovery Bank. It's fantastic having you in the studio. Thank you so much for your time and sharing your insights with the Tech Central audience today.
Duncan, thanks for having me.
Pleasure. Thank you.